I'm Matthew Petty and this is Intersection. The trial of George Zimmerman begins next week in Sanford, Florida. Zimmerman is facing second-degree murder charges for the killing of 17-year-old Trayvon Martin in February of last year. Zimmerman says he acted in self-defense when he shot the unarmed African-American teenager. I'll speak with Orlando Sentinel columnist Daryl Owens about the social impact of the incident and the effect of the upcoming trial on the city of Sanford and Central Florida's black community. Also, 90.7's Amy Green visited Sanford's historic African-American community of Goldsboro and speak to the residents there about their thoughts on the upcoming trial. That's ahead on Intersection. I'm joined in the studio by Daryl Owens. Daryl has been with the Orlando Sentinel for over two decades. He's currently a member of the Orlando Sentinel editorial board and writes a once-weekly general interest column on subjects ranging from education to human interest to social criticism. Daryl, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about the trial of George Zimmerman. Now, it's set for June 10th, and it's expected to last potentially up to 6 weeks. I want to ask you, Daryl Owens, now you've written some columns on this in the past, the case as it was unfolding last year. Do you feel like the verdict, whatever way it goes, has the potential to be a catalyst for some kind of flashpoint in Sanford?
I think you hit the nail right on the head here. A lot of people are obviously going to be watching this trial. Just from writing my columns, the feedback that I've received from readers, there are a lot of people out there who are concerned that should this verdict go in what some people might fear is the wrong direction, that we might have a repeat of what happened in Los Angeles after the Rodney King trial. Others also are afraid that if it goes in the other direction, that there's just going to be a lot of people who are questioning the law and how it works. Already Sanford, because of some incidents in the recent past in the way that the police have handled some cases, are under question. So it's just going to be very interesting to watch how this all turns out.
I guess in the aftermath of the shooting and leading up into the arrest, I mean, we had the likes of Al Sharpton down there, and the other civil rights leaders there too, Jesse Jackson as well, talking about, leading some of those fairly big gatherings of people calling for justice, and those were peaceful gatherings. There wasn't really any sense from when I was there covering the story that things would turn ugly. It seemed like a sort of a peaceful demonstrations, even though there were lots and lots of people, hundreds of people sort of flooding the streets. Does that sort of give you any sense that maybe some of these fears about what could happen after the trial are a little misplaced?
Well, I tend to think that that is the case, but again, judging from some of the mail that I received, you would read words like these are carpetbaggers coming down here to stir up the masses, and words like stir and to stir the pot. And people seem to have this notion that there is a slow-burning fuse here in Sanford, and that, again, a verdict in the wrong direction, in their opinion, is going to set a bigger spark and, just blow up the powder keg that's waiting to erupt in Sanford. But I tend to believe that people have a little more control, that they're a little more discerning, and I have a little more faith in the judicial process than some of these people have.
Now, you must get quite a few letters, depending on the columns you write, but did you find that the columns you wrote last year talking about the Trayvon Martin case and the George Zimmerman legal case as well, did they generate a lot more mail than you normally would have gotten?
Yes. We received quite a bit of mail. We received a number of phone calls. We also participated in some online chats regarding the case. And as you might expect, the opinions were split right down the line. And it kind of is a big reflection of how America views race. There have been a number of recent polls that just show that blacks, whites, and whoever else you want to throw into the mix all have different perceptions on race. I remember one poll that asked whether racism was a major problem here in America. And I believe the percentage was around 60% of blacks believed that racism was a big problem, whereas only 18% of whites thought the same thing. So there is just a different vantage point, I guess, on how people view race. And this case here has helped to bring that out locally.
Do you think it's always a case of these polar opposites, black and white? Because, you know, as you say, you were saying before that it's Orlando, if you look at Orlando, it's become a lot more cosmopolitan than it was, say, 20 years ago. And it's not just African-Americans and white Americans. Is it easy to break it into those two different parts?
I don't think that it is anymore. I think it's very simple to do that because of the peculiar history here in America between blacks and whites. We tend to look at race as a black and white issue. But if you look across the country, there are rivalries and blood feuds, in fact, between blacks and Koreans, blacks and Asians, and so forth and so on. So it's really a simple it's too simple to break it down to black and white. There are different types of colors in this racial mix, I guess, that we have to look at.
When you sort of think about some of the reporting of the Trayvon Martin case, do you feel like the media has done a good job in analyzing what went on and helping to not sort of oversimplify things too much?
I think we have done well in some circumstances, and I think we've done poorly in others. I think early on in the early reporting, before all the facts were coming in, and we still obviously don't have all the facts, that there tended to be an oversimplification of what happened here, that we initially reported that this was a situation of a white man shooting a black kid, and we learned later on, of course, that Mr. Zimmerman is Hispanic, and then we started to parse that as well, that he's a white Hispanic. And, you know, there really are various shades of being Hispanic as well, but this was kind of a cover your own butt kind of a deal here, unfortunately. So I think that early on we were oversimplifying things, but this Orlando Sentinel, for instance, as time went on, we completed a series on race here, looking at what was happening here in Central Florida, which took a more in-depth look at what race even meant, what it meant to be black, what it meant to be Hispanic, and those sorts of issues. So I think with the in-depth reporting that came later, we kind of redeemed ourselves as a media, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Now, you brought up an interesting perspective in one of your columns about race and injustice in high-profile cases like this one. You said that blacks banded behind O.J. Simpson, despite thinking he might be guilty as retribution for perceived injustices in cases like Rodney King, as you talked about before, and Emmett Till as well, going back a little bit further. Do you think the Zimmerman case is also in some ways spurring this kind of black versus white mentality?
Yes, and again, I think early on, especially when we were reporting that this was a white man who killed a black kid, I think it did. I'm hoping that some of that kind of sentiment has quelled as the reporting has given us a more complete picture of who Mr. Zimmerman is, at least as far as his racial and cultural background is concerned. But I still think some people have latched on to this case as just another example of injustice to the black man, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that's a flawed way of thinking.
It seems in some ways that no matter what happens with this case, some people are going to be unhappy about it. So is there a way for the case to go forward and for Sanford to come out unscathed?
Well, I would agree with that. And I think that's one of the things that we overlook about this particular case, because, you know, I see it as a crazy quilt of tragedies. Clearly, the overriding tragedy is that a 17-year-old man is dead. Also, Mr. Zimmerman's life, however this verdict turns out, has been changed irrevocably. And obviously, Sanford has come out of this case being tarred. It had a reputation going into this, as I wrote about recently, too, because of Jackie Robinson. And so it had distanced itself from that. Mm-hmm. But now this case again brings to fore whether Sanford is just this bastion of this old South mentality. Sanford, to its credit, has certainly tried to fix things by holding town hall meetings, by allowing the Orlando Sentinel to hold a forum on race in one of the churches there. So they have certainly been proactive in trying to dispel this sense that we're just this racist town, because I don't believe that. You certainly can't paint any town, well, many towns. There is a town out in Tennessee, I think it was Tennessee, that's a Klan town, but that's something altogether different. But with Sanford, everybody who lives in Sanford does not hold racial animosity. And for Sanford to come out of this with that type of perception is a disservice to Sanford.
Mm-hmm.
But to answer your question, I don't know how Sanford comes out of this any better except by continuing to be proactive in trying to deal with these issues head on.
Talking about the complexities of the case, as reporting became a little more subtle and nuanced on it, you talk about the ethnic background of George Zimmerman himself. Do you think that's changed the way African-Americans perceive this case?
That's a good question. I think it has changed for some. You know, obviously African-Americans aren't monolithic in thinking, so
sure.
It just depends on what your background is. You know, there are going to be some blacks who grew up in the time of segregation who are going to hold these types of feelings and perceptions and not let them go. But then you have blacks who were born post-civil rights who don't share that same animosity or distrust of white people. So they may have a more liberal viewpoint about what's going on now.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you a question, too, about, I suppose, just the general state of race relations in Central Florida. Now, in one of your columns, you said something I thought was interesting. You said, and I'm quoting here, "Racial hatred like crabgrass keeps coming back, fouling America's neatly manicured melting pot curb appeal." So on the one hand, you talk about the nation of the United States, and of course Florida as being a tapestry, but in some ways it seems like you're also suggesting that in some cases is just kind of curb appeal. It's just surface, and underneath there is still this sense of division.
Yeah, I believe that's the case. We talk a good game, and we certainly have talked about that in our historical documents. There are high-sounding words in there, and I think to a large degree, post-civil rights era, we do try to strive for that. But, there are just some things that, and some people who won't let things go. And as try as we might, we only give kind of there's a veneer, I guess, at trying to solve these problems. Situations such as what happened to Skip Gates in Boston, where the police officer basically accosted him at his own home. These types of situations give you a lens to some of the things that still have to be dealt with, that there still are stereotypes out there that people have not gotten past. There are still ill feelings out there. And the situation is because we really have never had an honest, candid, in-depth look at what race is and what it means in the 21st century. W.E.B. Du Bois, in his book, The Souls of Black Folk, talked about how race is the big problem of the 20th century. Well, friends, it's still the big problem of the 21st century, mm-hmm. because we are not honestly dealing with it.
Just getting back to the Trayvon Martin case, I'm wondering, do you feel like when it's all said and done, people are going to look at Central Florida differently? Do you feel like Central Florida, sort of building out from Sanford itself, people are going to, look at Central Florida and say, well, we're glad that we don't live there, or that, this couldn't happen in our own community? Or do you feel like this kind of situation could happen anywhere in the States?
Yes, it could certainly happen anywhere in the States, and it has happened anywhere in the United States. I think one of the issues with Sanford is that it's happening in the age of social media, for one thing, and that's allowing people to talk about this more even than back in the O.J. Situation. O.J. was on 24 hours every day on cable news, and it was a subject of CNN and whatever. But now people, because of Facebook, because of Twitter, are able to relay their opinions about this case. And a lot of times, unfortunately, these opinions aren't necessarily well-informed opinions, but mm-hmm. it still stimulates debate. It still helps to engender hate in those people who are going to hate. And I think because of the prevalence of social media and its emergence, that Sanford and Florida in general may get a black eye because of this case, which is sad. But again, going back to your question, it certainly could happen anywhere. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. for Florida and Central Florida, it happened in Sanford.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with Orlando Sentinel columnist Darrell Owens. We're talking about the upcoming George Zimmerman trial. You can join the conversation online at Facebook or Twitter, or you can email us at intersection@wmfe.org. And one of the other aspects of this case that really people were talking about a lot, and it seemed like there could be some kind of motive for change, was the issue of gun control. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, last year in terms of shootings, we had the Aurora, Colorado movie theater shooting, then of course Newtown, Connecticut elementary school shooting. But do you get the sense that, you know, much like stand your ground in the wake of the Trayvon Martin case, despite these big events, that there doesn't really seem to be much change? People talk about a lot about these things. There seems to be an idea that people do want to make some change immediately after the event, but then things move on. What's your sense of that?
Well, I think that's exactly right. I think all these tragic events stimulate a visceral reaction that, yes, we must clamp down on guns, but once that visceral reaction dies down, the reality of the situation is that America loves their guns. And we have a major lobby here in the United States called the NRA. They are very powerful. They are very outspoken. And unfortunately, they're very deep-pocketed as well. And because of that, politicians are hesitant, reluctant to make a change. And that's what happens. So we move on until the next shooting comes.
Mm-hmm.
And with Stand Your Ground, since you brought that up, you know, there were certainly this case and then some cases that came after this showed a number of the flaws in that law, you know. And I wrote that you don't necessarily need to scrap this law, but certainly you need to improve this law. We couldn't even do that. And it's because people don't want to risk, in their opinion, limiting their right to have guns.
What are the chances for another look at that? I know that Senator Chris Smith down in South Florida convened his own Stand Your Ground panel and came up with some alternative recommendations, but realistically, the chances of something like that getting through the legislature, do you think there's any chance of some kind of reform there happening?
I don't think that our legislature has the appetite for such reform. Rather, what we have shown a great desire to do is to allow Florida to be a proving ground for any law that the NRA wants to trot out.
Do you feel, though, that could there still be something good to come out of this case in terms of some kind of closer look at gun control or the laws on Florida's books? Or do you feel that maybe it's a hopeless case if you're coming at it from the point of view of somebody who wants to see some sort of reform?
Well, I suppose hope supposedly springs eternal, but my springs are rusty right now, so I don't see it happening.
Well, getting back to the issue of race in America, and one of your other columns from last year, you wrote about when Barack Obama was elected president, it seemed like we might be moving to an era. There was an idea that we could be heading towards a sort of post-racial state. But then, of course, the events of last year and all the talk that followed showed that that's not really the case.
Mm-hmm.
What's it going to take for America to move beyond that racial divide?
Well, if I had the answer to that question. But I think that, for one thing right now, any thought about improving race relations is being hampered by our economic situation. Unfortunately, when people's pockets are bare, that brings out the worst in us. And right now, because there aren't jobs, those petty biases that exist among people get magnified. And if you're someone who is sitting at home and you're wondering why you were laid off and that black guy who you think is not as well qualified as you are is still working, that doesn't help us to move towards a discussion of race and improving our race relations. So I think the first thing that's going to happen is that this economy is going to have to improve. Mm-hmm. And once people are feeling fat cat happy again, maybe we can move forward and have a discussion about how can we in this divisive era in which we're living in right now, where nothing can get done because all we see is color.
Mm-hmm. Some final thoughts on the George Zimmerman trial. Do you? I mean, you've talked about the fact that there is possibly this risk of some kind of conflagration, I guess you might call it. Are you hopeful that Sanford can sort of move beyond it at some point, and that Central Florida can heal whatever rift has been, you know, exposed by this case?
Yes, I am. I mentioned earlier about the series that the Orlando Sentinel did, Standing in the Shadows of Race. Well, I was one of the writers on that series, and the part of that I contributed was a look back at a story I wrote back 20 years ago during the Rodney King riots. I went back to revisit this community in Ivy Lane, which I had visited 2 decades ago after Rodney King. And what I found was that the attitudes of these people had changed tremendously about race, that they were more hopeful, that they saw race less as a sword over their heads, that it was not an anchor anymore. And back then, when we were first doing the story back in 94, the series we did then, there was this concern that if Rodney King's the police officers involved in that were found innocent, that there would be a riot here in Central Florida.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you read about a riot in Central Florida because it didn't happen. So I think the same thing will happen here, that people aren't sitting around in their homes with their pitchforks and torches ready to run out there when that verdict is rendered. I think that people are smarter than that. And I think people certainly have more control of themselves than that. So I think there will be some disappointment for some on however this verdict comes out. But, yeah, I don't think Central Florida, Sanford area is at risk of it being burnt to the ground.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting you talk about Rodney King. Of course, he himself made that plea for everybody to just get along. So sometimes things seem to sort of take a life of their own beyond the actual facts of the case which engendered them, I guess.
Absolutely, and it's funny you bring that up. You know, his plea was ridiculed as being simplistic, but when you think about it, why don't we just get along? That's what it takes. Us making a conscious, intentional decision to get along. And that's what we need to do.
I've been speaking to Darryl Owens. He's an Orlando Sentinel columnist, and he's on the Orlando Sentinel editorial board. We've been talking about the upcoming George Zimmerman case. Darryl, thanks very much for joining us.
It was my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Up next, 90.7's Amy Green visits the Sanford community of Goldsboro to talk to the residents about the upcoming trial. Jury selection starts next week in the second-degree murder trial of George Zimmerman. The former Neighbourhood Watch volunteer faces trial in Sanford, the same community where he shot and killed Trayvon Martin last year. And that's just a few miles from Goldsboro, the state's second-oldest African-American community. And as 90.7's Amy Green reports, for Goldsboro residents, the trial represents the latest in a long civil rights struggle.
Now, under here, and we don't have anything displayed yet, but under here is where, when we got notebooks.
For Frances Oliver, Goldsboro's history is a passion. She's founder and curator of a museum in Goldsboro, where she's collected relics from last year's marches calling for George Zimmerman's arrest and from memorials for Trayvon Martin.
Different things like this, pictures, all kind of stuff in here. These are newspaper articles from last year. We got Skittles and, you know, we got a whole bunch of stuff. We got some in this closet here. We got
Martin wasn't from Goldsboro, and he wasn't in Goldsboro the night of his death. He was from Miami Gardens, in Sanford with his father visiting his father's fiancée. But now Martin forever is part of Goldsboro's history. The trial that will determine Zimmerman's fate also will define Martin's place in the community's history.
Came from up north somewhere. These were some of the posters that were, these were newspaper articles.
Did you collect all of these things yourself?
Well, yeah, a lot of people brought them in, and we right here.
Oliver opened the museum not long before Martin's death to celebrate, as she puts it, the demise of Goldsboro a century ago, when Sanford leaders dissolved the community's charter so Sanford could expand in its place.
We feel like that's where the friction started,
between Sanford and the black community, because Goldsboro was an all-black city, and it's just never, it's always been there since 1911.
Last year's marches drew thousands and sparked protests worldwide. Sanford police delayed arresting Zimmerman for more than a month after Martin's shooting in February 2012 under the so-called Stand Your Ground law. Martin was black. Zimmerman is Hispanic and white. The marches began with black community leaders here in Goldsboro who say they don't expect the same for Zimmerman's trial because already they have achieved what they wanted. Valerie Houston is pastor of Allen Chapel AME Church in Goldsboro.
The purpose of the demonstrations and the prayer vigils and the rallies was to get Zimmerman arrested so that the family would have some peace of mind about what actually happened.
At those marches, Martin transformed from a 17-year-old boy to a symbol, with images of his face appearing on T-shirts and posters. To Houston, Martin is a
pioneer, as all persons who died unjustly. He's right up there with Dr. Martin Luther King and Medgar Evers and all of us civil rights leaders who fought for a cause.
The marches represented a bubbling over of long simmering tensions between Sanford and Goldsboro. Since then, Sanford leaders have worked to strengthen relations. They hired a new police chief in April. Cecil Smith, who is black, has been going door to door in Goldsboro meeting with residents. He says building trust also includes
being at the community meetings, showing up at neighborhood watch meetings, showing up at kickball programs that are offered in the community, working with the kids at the Westside Community Center, which is right in the heart of Goldsboro.
Turner Clayton Jr. is the local president of the NAACP. He says tensions have simmered for so many years, and mending relations will take many more.
There have been so many different cases where law enforcement has actually disappointed the community in handling of a lot of cases. And so he has his work cut out for him. And of course, going around walking and knocking on doors, that's a start, but it's going to take more than that.
Sanford police have been working with Goldsboro leaders to bolster security for the trial. Smith won't discuss details, but urges against civil disorder.
All of the national media, all of the glow, all of the things that are happening outside of this community, if it has an influence on the community, once all of that's done, we will be the ones who will have to be here to resolve whatever those issues are and live with whatever comes of it.
Across the street from the Goldsboro Museum is a new permanent memorial for Martin. Francis Oliver says Goldsboro wants justice, and if Zimmerman is acquitted, the community will feel as though
justice did not prevail. And if you still can kill a black boy who all he got is Skittles and an iced tea in his hand, then we are not safe on the streets.
Goldsboro is a half dozen miles from the courthouse where Zimmerman will face trial. I'm Amy Green, 90.7 News.
The conversation about what's happening in Florida continues online at wmfe.org/intersection. There you can also sign up for our weekly podcast. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners. Brendan Byrne is assistant producer. I'm Matthew Petty. Thanks for listening.